Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
What food is a staple in the diet of more than 500 million people worldwide? We'll find out, and more, on A Taste of the Past. Hi, you are listening to A Taste of the Past here on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, and I'm Linda Palacio, your host. So, I asked the question, what food is a staple in the diet of more than 500 million people worldwide? Big hint, it's not rice. Well, this one we're talking about certainly is not. It's manioc. Manioc, also known as cassava and yucca, and it's a food that is indigenous to the Amazon region, actually. And here to talk about it today, we have three very interesting people. Two from Brazil, where manioc is grown, and the third, a writer who's working with them. First is Teresa Carçao. Teresa is a chef and owner of the well-known restaurant O Navegador in Rio de Janeiro. And she has been sort of leading the helm of saving the manioc root as a heritage vegetable, and we're going to hear a lot more about that. And with her is Sarah Franklin. Sarah is a writer, traveler, and storyteller, and oral historian who is caught up in Teresa's search for the root of the manioc root. And also with them is Margarita Nogueira. And Margarita Nogueira is the founder of Slow Food Brazil, and as well as a co-founder with Teresa of Instituto Maniva, which we'll learn more about, in educating the people of Brazil to better feed themselves. What more can I say? Welcome to all of you. Teresa, my first question is, tell us a little. Well, first of all, how did you get interested in manioc? Now, manioc is, we don't know, manioc is also tapioca, which many of us know, of course, tapioca. We may not be familiar with manioc itself, but certainly the cassava root we see in many of our markets. I think the first time I saw it was a Jamaican fruit stand, and now you see it in just about every market in America. So it's the same as manioc. Cassava, manioc, tapioca, yucca. Tell us about
this.
Yes.
So, actually, it's a gluten-free staple food, and that's very important. Well, cassava is originated from Brazil, manioc, and it has spread throughout the world. Now we have the first producer of the roots are Nigeria. Is Nigeria, and Thailand is the first producer of the starch.
So they're the major. Oh, so Thailand produces. All right, now talk about Nigeria grows, is the leading grower of the root.
Yes.
But Thailand is the leading producer of the flour?
Of the starch.
The starch.
Of the starch.
Okay.
And the starch is what makes the tapioca pearls. So that's where, in Singapore actually, where the tapioca pearls. It started to be very fashionable in those drinks, the bubble tea drink.
Yes, yeah.
So cassava and manioc was originated in the Amazon, between the Amazon and Cerrado, which is another region of Brazil. Some people say about 5,000 years ago.
5,000 years BC is something that I had read, even longer. Yeah, even further.
Yeah, 5,000 years BC.
The history is a little fuzzy.
7,000.
7,000 BC, right.
And it's all around Brazil. Everyone eats cassava products every day, but sometimes they don't know that that's a cassava product. And also is very underestimated because it's like poor people's food. Everyone think about it as a non-glamorous food or no gourmet food. So that's why we started this quest and this mission to show the world that this product is really, really a very important, very delicious and very healthy one as well. Yeah.
Delicious, I can attest to, because there was a presentation that Teresa gave the other evening, and I sampled some goodies. She made an incredible couscous with the manioc flour, the coarse flour.
Yeah.
All right, a few interesting facts about manioc to let our listeners know, what is this? If they've seen the cassava root, they see, it's just this big tuber. What do we do with it? Well, the interesting thing is there are two types of manioc, actually,
yes,
right?
Yes, there is the bitter type or wild type that you cannot boil and eat like any other tuber. You have to process it into subproducts like the meal, farinha de mandioca, mm-hmm. manioc meal, and the starch, and also tucupi, which is a very typical regional broth they make in the Amazon.
Is that the
region.
Same as the fufu? Or
No.
Because that was made, different, starchier.
Yeah,
thicker.
The fufu is made with the root. It's an African staple, like a polenta in Africa. Mm-hmm. And we don't have this in Brazil, actually. It's very funny because the Portuguese took the roots from Brazil to Africa, and some of the recipes developed there in Africa, but they didn't, were originated from Brazil. So it's really, cassava went all over the world, and we don't know yet all the recipes you can find.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sarah, you, just on a lark, decided to travel to Brazil several years ago, and then you made several trips back. Tell me about your encounter with Teresa and what interested you in her story and her work.
So I just had sort of a life change moment early in my 20s and had always wanted to go to Brazil. And I had been working in sustainable agriculture farming and also doing advocacy work with small scale farmers here in the U.S. And I bought a ticket for 3 months solo, and I had a month in Rio to start. And so I did my homework and was looking around for who was who in sustainable food in Brazil. And
you weren't just there for Carnaval.
Not at all. I actually did. I tried as best as I could to escape Carnaval. It's quite a scene, as these two can attest to.
I'm sure.
But the names of these two women kept coming up again and again and again in the context of slow food and sustainability and gastronomy. And I just followed my nose and wrote an email, and they invited me for lunch. And it actually wasn't until my second trip to Rio a year later that we got to meet. We just missed one another in that first trip. But I had fallen completely in love with Brazil on my first trip. I was romping around working with farmers and chefs. And we sat down for lunch on my second trip to Brazil. And I just found this story fascinating. It was, you know, as a cook, as a farmer, I had encountered this root a bit, but I didn't really know what to do with it. And I certainly didn't understand the extent of how pervasive it is in world cuisine.
Indeed.
Yeah. And about halfway through our conversation, I pretty meekly said to Teresa, "Have you thought about doing a book?" And she said, "Yeah, I've thought about it. I'll do it eventually." And you know, I got the idea planted in my head. And as Teresa will say, I was quite persistent. And I really wanted to come along on the quest for this story, partly because I think these two women are remarkable, but, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to learn along with them. It's just an incredible, there's so much cultural context and history around this root, and it's delicious.
Well, the book is not out yet, but you can look for it next year. Hopefully it'll be out next year.
2014. World Cup time.
The working title at this time is called The Manioc Root, Navigating the Roots of Brazilian Cuisine. And speaking of roots of Brazilian cuisine, Margarida Nogueira, as I mentioned earlier, was the founder of Slow Food Brazil. And Margarida, had you known Teresa for a long time?
Yes.
So you've been involved in the food world for
a
long time.
Yes, I am a chef too, but I don't have any more restaurants. And when I discovered Slow Food by the internet, I just fell in love with all the philosophy of the movement. And a year after, I took Teresa to the Slow Food Award in Oporto, Portugal. And she was amazed. She had already been thinking about the Brazilian staples. And when she went there and we came back, she decided to have Instituto Maniva inspired on slow food movement.
Well, Teresa, when we were talking about, you said the manioc, you weren't aware, so many people aren't aware of manioc, thinking it was a poor food. And there is good reason for that, too, because it is very high in calories and very starchy. So a little of it goes a long way. It can feed a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
You were telling, there were some facts about...
Yes, it's the number one crop. Like 80% of what we eat today in Brazil comes from the small farmers, and that's their number one crop, so it's quite huge. But it's, like I said before, it's underestimated, like a gourmet food. So people think of it just like a side thing and with no glamour at all. And
right.
That's what we want really to bring the attention of the sustainability aspect of it because of all these people that plant it, but also the gastronomy part.
Well, I was a little fact that I found in doing some research. I found that the manioc plant, or the cassava root, is a plant whose starch-filled root produces more calories per acre of crop than any other food except sugarcane. And interestingly enough, sugarcane is another product of the area, right?
Yeah, it wasn't Brazil. Originated in Brazil.
But not originated.
Yeah, it was brought by the Portuguese.
Well, so the manioc is not really, how do you say, popular or grown or known throughout the country?
No, it's very popular, very popular. We have this like potatoes, like string potatoes made of yuca. And it all the time is not in our table, in our dinners, but it's not considered a high quality or a high gourmet food.
Mm-hmm.
It's not considered like a...
Almost invisible in some way, you might say.
Yes,
Ignored. Like potatoes, the food that feeds the world. Mm-hmm. It's always on the side dish, exactly. But it's never really the star of the show.
Right.
Yeah, actually, it's a very good example because potatoes. What's happening with potatoes is that Peru, the originated place, like manioc was Brazil was origin of manioc. Peru people had brought all those many varieties, more than 2,000 varieties of potatoes. They are brought up by gastronomy. And today you can find in Lima, for instance, lots of autochthonous varieties of potatoes. And maybe this could be an example how you can get a staple that's underestimated and make it a gourmet food, interesting.
Well, a couple stories that you related that I would love to have you share with us. One is, who discovered the manioc and how did it start getting cultivated? And you told an interesting story about the Portuguese explorers.
Yeah, actually, all the indigenous people from Brazil, from the Brazilian area, were the founders, the discoverer, because it was a wild variety that became domesticated by the indigenous people. And actually, it's a very the wild variety is poisonous. So you have to take
now out. That is really okay. It's a food that feeds over 500 million people worldwide, and yet it is naturally a poisonous root.
Yes, it is not poisonous. It has poisonous things on it, which is especially the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, there's a dish in the Amazon that you have to cook the leaves for 8 days to take away the poison. Well, but the poisonous side of the plant was really interesting because it took away all the, how do you say, the
predators or the pests or the
pests.
Diseases.
All the Yeah, it was like a sustainable, like a naturally protected plant. So they domesticated, the indigenous people domesticated that plant and it became their staple food. So this is how it became. What was the second question? Sorry.
I was wondering about this, and the poison that's in this is the
hydrocyanic acid, cyanide compound.
Yeah, yeah,
that's a
cyanide.
Good one.
Hydrocyanic acid. Okay,
it's the cyanide pre-cyanide thing.
Acid. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but they and then just by heating it or boiling it, it goes away.
Actually, it goes away even if you cut like the leaves. If you cut it and leave it in the air, mm-hmm. it volatilizes and it doesn't get poisonous anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a very well-known doctor in Brazil, she created this powder, highly nutritious for poor kids, made of manioc leaves, very high on vitamin A and iron and calcium. And just by cutting those leaves that they threw away, she created this powder to put like in their food, mm-hmm. all over their food.
No waste.
But
right.
just to be clear, there's the bitter manioc, which yeah. indeed has this poisonous outer coating. But then there's the sweet manioc, which is what you'll find in your markets, and that is not at all poisonous.
Yes. Cassava, as we call
peeled.
Cassava root, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that can be peeled and either boiled or baked or fried, and that's yeah. you would never find the poisonous manioc yeah. root in a market anywhere.
Okay. You yes. will not find the poisonous root in the market.
Do not fear.
The cassava root is not poisonous. It's the sweet manioc.
That's
it is. It's
right.
good. It's okay.
Yeah. And this is called yuca. Not right. yaca, yuca.
Yuca with one C.
With one C.
Right.
And you can like grate it and fry it, grate it. You can cook it like a tuber, like a potato. You can make mashed potato from it, which is delicious.
Like French fries.
French fries, yes. which is special.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, you had made it was a grated and dried flour called the farinha.
Yeah, that was a very special and difficult farinha to get because it's a farinha from the Amazon, and that was going that way to make farinha was going to be extinct. The packaging that you saw, that's a very special and ancient ancestor type of thing. And in Instituto Maniva, we have this support from a bank, and we could do this project for 3 years there, and now 21. Small communities can make this again, and we are selling this in São Paulo and Rio. So
now it is a coarse. It's like a grain, like a couscous,
mm-hmm.
a grain, and that is indeed the dish that Teresa made, and it was fluffy. It was just wonderful. And when she said the packaging, Sarah, maybe you could describe for our listeners the special packaging of the.
Yeah, so
flour.
This is something that had caught Teresa's eye at a street fair, at a market. But the farinha is wrapped in leaves that are dried, and naturally it seals the farinha for a year. So even the intense humidity of the Amazon won't touch it. It will not spoil, and it's protected from the light for a year. And then it's wrapped in this incredibly beautiful woven, almost basket around the leaves, and so it's a self-contained basket with a handle on top, and it's just this incredibly lovely little package. And this
Teresa had an example of one the other
exactly,
night, and I saw it.
Yeah.
It's its own little gift package.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
beautiful, and it's small. It's only about 5 inches.
But
they have different variety,
different sizes. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't used to be small because they make in larger size, like 6 kilos pack,
to feed a lot of people
to
right.
feed all the time. Because in the Amazon, they eat that farinha in all meals, in all situations, like for breakfast with fruit, for lunch with fish, dinner they eat with meat and vegetables. So they eat manioc flour all the time. So they had to have the large packaging. But for us, for Rio and São Paulo, they start making the smaller and smaller. So
as sort of a gourmet item for people who are really interested in artisanal.
Yeah. Smaller so and smaller and charging more and more.
Yeah. I mean, exactly what's happening here in the U.S.
The added value that we are teaching them, that the added value is really important to sell those foods mm-hmm. in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. You were asking what was the other story I wanted you to relate, and that was about the Portuguese settlers coming in.
Okay, yeah. Well, then the indigenous made all this thing about the manioc. Then the Portuguese colonizers came, and they were wheat-fed
culture.
Yeah. So what they tried to do is to bring their wheat and the bread. And they couldn't, because wheat is never grown in Brazil up to today. We still import 80% of our wheat, and we eat wheat every day in our breakfast. So it's a kind of a ambiguous situation, very bad for sustainability.
Yes.
And what happened is they tried to plant wheat and they couldn't, so they learned with the indigenous people to create this manioc flour similar to wheat to make all sorts of breads and
cakes and biscuits and yeah.
Yes.
I was really impressed about how light and fluffy, totally gluten-free, by the way, for those of you listening who are gluten intolerant.
Yeah.
The manioc flour is, the tapioca flour. You could find tapioca flour in
everywhere now.
A lot of markets. Yeah, and so it is a very light flour.
Yes, and I encourage people to experiment it. With it, because it's really something so versatile. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to have to just play with it.
So the Portuguese colonists came in and planted all these.
No, they tried to bring the wheat and they couldn't. But they have to colonize the country. So what they did, they entered the land and the forest, the jungle. Not the jungle, all over the country. And what helped them to colonize the country was actually manioc, because the indigenous people planted the manioc roots, the manioc stem, actually, maniva.
It's propagated, right, from cuttings of the stem.
From the cuts of the stem. So they planted that all over the way in the jungle. And then when they came back 1 year after, they had staple food waiting.
So the growth period, the maturation period, is a year.
A year and a half. Depends on the variety, but it depends on which place of Brazil, because it's grown all over Brazil, not only in the Amazon.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, we are going to learn more about that and more about your work with the sustainable movement when we come back after a short break.
Ooh, when my baby smiles at me, I go to Rio de Janeiro. Samba and La Bamba. Now I'm not the kind of person with a passion or persuasion for dancing or romancing, but I give in to the rhythm and my feet follow the beating of my heart.
Well, it got us all dancing here in the studio. I hope it did you, too. We are in Rio, in my head, anyway. Margarita Nogueira, one of our guests today, is the co-founder, along with Teresa, of the Instituto Maniva. Maniva meaning the stem of the manioc, right?
Yes.
Okay, which
yes.
is, and that's how the manioc plant is propagated. So Maniva is very, very important. Margarita, tell me, what is the mission of the Institute, the Instituto Maniva?
Well, Instituto Maniva was founded 5 years ago, and we have three main
goals.
Agriculture, that means helping the small farmers together with the chefs so that they can improve their
Situation or living. Yeah.
Yes. We have the culture issue, that we have some films already done, and also programs with the children education, that we're at the TV cable in Rio de Janeiro, in all over Brazil. And also we have the education part. The education is more what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I am the coordinator for some workshops at elementary school for children between 7 years and 12, where we teach them the importance of manioc through history, geography, and at the final, gastronomy. They all learn how to prepare a small crepe, known all over Brazil, that is called tapioca.
With a tapioca flour, of course.
Yes, and it's amazing.
But you actually call the crepe tapioca.
Yes, tapioca. Oh. Yes. That's something very funny, because somewhere, so I don't know, in India, tapioca means manioc. So it's a little bit confusing. But this little crepe is called tapioca, and the children learn how to do. We also have a program with teenagers, teaching them how to cook and how to have a better and healthy
eating habits.
Eating habits.
Interesting. It's such an important project. I mean, even in here in America, we are trying the same thing. We, you know, it's something that we struggle with all the time. Is healthier eating.
It's not only a question of teaching how to cook healthy food, but it's also a question of teaching how to cook ancient ancestor food, because this is related to the past, to their parents and grandparents. And this makes a link, a bond between generations, which is really important.
That is wonderful, yeah. I don't think we could say that we have anything in America that's indigenous to our land that is quite as important as that, that is such a broad reaching crop. I mean, well, maybe, tomatoes are New World, but they're not.
Yeah, maybe because indigenous. Of the miscegenation. In Brazil, the population is very miscegenated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think in U.S. it's so much.
Because I think it is.
I think it is, yeah.
I don't think we really have a native cuisine in the same way, and I think there are some crops indigenous to the U.S., but we've done a pretty good job of sweeping them under the rug.
Yeah, talk about wild rice.
Yes.
Isn't it wild rice, absolutely.
And they are, right, and it's not, these things, like even tomatoes, can't really be grown or weren't found all over the country, only in certain areas, of course, in the southern Americas,
not in the United States. North America, right.
Yeah. So
but that is our main difference from other cooking schools, that we want to teach also history and this feeling, this affection. We say that food is affection, culture, and heritage.
That's wonderful to have that bond, as you say, that link. The book... Sarah, I noticed in reading about your plans for the book that, and this has got to be your particular area of it, that you want to have a audiovisual component or an audio component to it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's incredibly exciting in storytelling, any kind of storytelling right now, whether it's filmmaking or journalism of any kind, is this ability to, the internet has made it possible to take people places, to really bring them to where you are. And, you know, we're all members of, as you are, the International Association of Culinary Professionals, hundreds of people that write cookbooks are involved in some way. And the production of sort of getting culinary knowledge out there into the world in one way or another. And, you know, print books are wonderful, and I have plenty of them. I would never say anything bad against them, but I think to have something that complements that, that encompasses still images and video and also audio, taking people to places they may well never have a chance to go. It's, you know, that we're talking about far corners of Brazil that are not on the radar for tourists at all, let alone for most Brazilians. It's an enormous country, and most of it is still really underexplored, I would say.
And also the video has another use, which is to the small farmers. Once we made our first video, that is called Manioc Flower Professor, which is in the internet, we sent the small farmer, Mr. Benet, we sent him the film. And he never saw a film before. He didn't have even a CD player. A DVD player, actually. And what happened is he bought the thing to watch himself in the movie. And he started using that movie as a commercial card, like a presentation of himself. So for them, it's really important, because that's the only way that they can see themselves from the outside. They have a... And that was really important in our project.
Now, the film, it's not translated into English.
It has subtitles.
It does have subtitles. On the internet when you see
it? Yeah, if you look, if you search for Seubene Vipra Talia.
So wait, how do you find it on the internet?
It's called Seubene, Seubene, Vipra Talia, goes to Italy. And it's the story of this small farina producer being flown to the Terra Madre festival in Torino. And it's his first time out of Brazil on an airplane and meeting thousands of producers, small producers from all over the world, and just being completely overwhelmed. It's a beautiful film that was shown all over and actually was brought to the Berlin Film Festival. It's really remarkable.
We will get that internet link on our website, on our page. So if you log on to heritageradionetwork.com and go to my show, A Taste of the Past, for today's segment, The Manioc Root, you will be able to find that link to the internet. And we're coming to the close here, and I wanted to mention a little bit about your interest in the ancient, in preserving the historic stories, properties of foods. A little game that you both play with kids when you're trying to break the ice and do the education portion of your work, and that is, you played it with us the other night. Teresa took a small orange, and there was a crowd, I guess we were about 30 people in the room, and she just tossed it out to someone, and they had to catch it, and they had to talk about, what if you were a food, what food would you be? Well, I toss that to you, Teresa. Probably a pretty easy question.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Easy.
Here's the orange. It's in your hands.
Okay, I'll be a manioc. I'll be a wild manioc. Because I'd like to be many things at once. And I'd love to feed so many people that manioc used to feed in the past days and still feeds the poor people. And I'll be that.
Well, I think it's something that is very well deserved for us to learn even more about. And I thank you for sharing your knowledge, all of you. Margarida Neguera, Sarah Franklin, and Teresa Carçao, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And
thank
again,
you.
You've been listening
you too.
You've been listening to A Taste of the Past on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, and I'm your host, Linda Palacio.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.